match.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Sportsman. I'm the Big Ticket. We've got Joey D over there. He's looking at his phone, but I'm sure he'll be engaged at some point. We have Mikey V down there. Actually, we're on the sides now. So Mikey's either on my right or on my left. But we're all here and we're excited. We're all a little beaten and battered, but we're going to get this episode out for you folks. We're going to be doing two this week, regardless, but this is number one, okay? Do us a favor and hit that like, comment, and subscribe button to YouTube and the Instagram. Fire questions over, and Mr. Anderson will give them to us, and we will answer them at the end of each episode. Gentlemen, let's just jump right into the bowl game. Let's dive into the championship game. Michigan, Washington, you know, it wasn't much of a game. There was a period there where it didn't look like either team wanted it, and then the fourth quarter, just Michigan pulled away. Mikey, why don't you walk me through that game?
Well, you know, I was back and forth on this game. I know I gave out, we had a pick it last week, but when the moment came and I had to put out a pick for my subscription service, I really was not, the number had moved so high that Michigan was like, at that point, they were a 5 or a 5.5 point favorite. I wasn't comfortable giving out Washington either, but I wasn't comfortable going against Washington. So I ended up settling on the under, which worked out. But it certainly looked like in the first quarter it wasn't going to work out because Michigan was averaging a touchdown every time they ran the ball. Michigan did what I thought they would. Donovan Edwards, Blake Corum. Washington figured it out, the run game, but they figured it out too late. Halftime comes. Washington has the momentum. They're only down a touchdown. They answer back. They're down 17-3. They make it 17-10. They come out of the tunnel at halftime. You figure maybe Washington can, you know, even this game out and it's going to be a football game. First play, he throws an interception. I thought, even though it was still a 7-point game for a little while there, I thought that was pretty much the indicator that it was over. Penix clearly was not himself. He was hurt. Guy's been dinged up all year. He's been hurt. And this game, it looked like whatever was going on with his ribs or whatever was going on, it got re-aggravated, and that was the end of the story. Hats off to Michigan, an incredible season, an incredible run, a long time coming, two previous exits in the last two playoffs in the semifinal round. They finally got there and they took care of business. J.J. McCarthy, an all-time Michigan quarterback. Again, I'm not going to say he's the best Michigan quarterback of all time, but certainly an all-time Michigan quarterback. I mean, the guy only lost three games his entire career at Michigan, and he's got a national championship. He's got three Big Ten titles. So, again, hats off to Michigan. Tremendous job. Tremendous job. And Jim Harbaugh, like I said last week, I thought it would come down to a lot of coaching. And I mean, Washington in the coaching department is outmatched when compared to Michigan. So hats off to them.
Joey D.
I piggyback on almost everything Mikey said. I truly believe that this game was going to be won by a touchdown or more by Michigan. I just thought that they are a better team. They're more experienced. As we said last week, I thought the pressure that they would bring on Penix would be the difference. And it turned out that it was. He had no time in the pocket. Their defense, man, they looked unbelievable. Even when he was throwing balls downfield, their corners were draped. I mean, there was the one play where he missed Odunze for what would have been a touchdown. That was a big miss. But aside from that, their corners, their linebackers, I mean, they were bringing pressure from all angles, and it really just was disruptive. And it had him, especially in the fourth quarter, just out of sorts. And I think, as Mikey said, he was banged up to begin with, so that didn't help. The running game is always going to be the difference when Michigan's playing. Everybody thought it was going to be Corum early on. It was Edwards with two massive runs. And then Corum joined the party later. They're, to me, the best running team in football, or one of them in collegiate football. And once they start doing that, they don't need to rely on J.J. McCarthy. And that's a recipe for success. And that's what they did. They played their style of football. And you know what? This team was a team a lot of people don't like, but to me, it was the best team in football throughout a majority of the season. Aside from that one Alabama game, they really had control of almost every game that they played. So hats off to them. It's going to be interesting next year with the new, style of playoffs, because I think you'll get teams who wouldn't have sneaked into the top four, who could be challenging, who could pose, a threat to some of these higher seeded teams. And who got left out. So I think that turned out to be a great playoff. It turned out to be overall a good championship, but this game was pretty much over early on. And Michigan bettors, they were rewarded all year. So congrats. Yeah,
and to piggyback on Joe again, you know, he's talking about the pressure, and a lot of people will say, well, you know, Joe, they didn't sack him really, but that's not really what it's about. When you have a pocket guy like Penix, it's just about getting him off of his spot. And Michigan was able to get him off of his spot, and he just never looked comfortable. He just never looked comfortable. It's not always about they got to get five sacks like they got against Alabama, or seven sacks. It's about moving Penix off his spot. On the flip side also, McCarthy, like Joe said, he only completed 10 passes, and they still scored a ton of points, and they look like they dominate. But that's their game, like Joe said. Run and take the onus off of J.J. McCarthy. And again, another good point, like Joe said, next year, you know, it's going to be interesting, because if you have a team like Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, that are now in the playoff, but they're not a top four team, any of those teams, they're good enough to knock off any of these other teams. So it'll definitely be interesting next year.
Yeah, I'll keep it short. But the thing that really stuck out to me in that game was, especially in the late in the second and then the third quarter, I think Michigan is the best team in the country. But they were gettable in that game. They didn't play their best football, I don't think. Washington, if they had a fully healthy Penix, and they had a fully healthy, even maybe even more important, Dylan Johnson, their running back, he was so obviously playing through an injury. They both were. If they were both healthy, I think Michigan still is the best team in the country, but they were gettable in that game, especially in the third quarter. I mean, Washington had their opportunities. They were hurt. They couldn't capitalize. That's college football. Congrats to Michigan. Quick question I want to throw to you guys, just very quickly. Penix, NFL. How's he going to be? Is he going to be a decent NFL QB? Is he going to be a backup for his whole career? What do you make of him? Joe, I'll start with you.
I think he'll be very good, actually. I think he's got all the makings of a successful quarterback. He's a pocket guy. He's a pass first quarterback. He doesn't try to rely on his legs unless he needs to. I would be very interested in see who would take him. I would love to see a team like the Giants, who desperately need a quarterback, you know, because the Daniel Jones thing, I don't know what they're going to do with that. But a team like that that has a strong runner already, and he would make an immediate impact. I think he's going to be very good. I think Jaden Daniels, to me, is going to be the best NFL-ready quarterback out of everyone. But, I mean, Penix is awesome. He looks very mature. He makes smart decisions. He doesn't turn the ball over too much. I think he'll be good.
Mikey?
Yeah, I think it's going to be situational with Penix, because I think two things are very, very clear with Michael Penix. For him, in order for him to succeed, first of all, he's got to have at least somewhat of a decent arsenal of receivers. You know, every quarterback in the NFL, in order to succeed, does. But more importantly than that, his health and his offensive line. If he's going to be protected and he could have a clean pocket, and it's a team that's O-line is pretty much squared away already, I think he'll be successful if he stays healthy. His health has been, unfortunately, the issue with him his entire collegiate career. Two knee injuries, one in Indiana that sent him to Washington. Washington, he gets hurt. And then again, you saw towards the end here, long season, 14, 15 games. NFL season's a long, long season, man. It's 17 games before you even talk about getting to the playoffs. I just think it's gonna be tough for him if he's not going to be able to stay healthy. If he's going to be one of these guys where, you know, he gets hit a couple times and he's going to get dinged up right away, it could be trouble for him. So that's going to be a lot of things that, you know, all these medicals and the combine and all this stuff, that's going to take into consideration. So that's going to be the story for Michael Penix, is his health and how good the offensive line is in front of him.
Yeah, I agree. Joe, I'm trying to listen to Mikey, and you're feeding the dog like he's Caesar. You're feeding him grapes from the top like he's Jesus Christ.
Man. Dog deserves it. Dog deserves it.
He's got an egg here. An egg, and he's got a Parmesan cheese here. He's a big fan of the Grana Padana.
This dog eats better than 90% of children in America, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, dog's eating better than 90, me.
90% of adults.
Yeah, sure.
He's on a raw lamb diet, and he eats organic chicken.
A raw lamb diet, you said?
Yeah, raw lamb.
Raw lamb. Yeah.
Christ Almighty.
Only the finest.
Sure.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Sure. All right, guys, let's pivot. A lot of people moving on from their current situation. A lot of great coaches, titans of industry. We're talking college football, so let's just start with Nick Saban. Nick Saban is leaving Alabama. Mikey, talk me through his legacy and what Alabama is going to do from here.
I mean, you talk about legacy, you talk about college football. I mean, there's only one guy that you're really talking about in terms of people who are on a different tier than others. Nick Saban may have just, you know, set his own specific tier. 72 years old, so how much longer was it going to last? I think a lot of these old-time coaches, too, like, they don't want to deal with this NIL bullshit anymore. Like, they don't want to have to deal with, you know, it's one thing before the NIL, what went on underneath the table, nobody really knew about it, was hush-hush. Now that it's out in the open, it's basically a competitive market where you got to pay these guys, and what kid wants to get paid? Saban probably don't want to deal with that anymore. What else does he have to prove? 17 seasons at Alabama, 206 career wins, $120 million in pay, 124 NFL draft picks produced, 11 SEC titles, 6 national titles at Alabama, 1 at LSU, 7 national titles total, 2 times AP Coach of the Year, 5-time SEC Coach of the Year. There is nothing left for Nick Saban to prove. There wasn't anything left for Nick Saban to prove 10 years ago. He could have left 5, 6, 7 years ago, and everyone would have said he's the greatest of all time, greatest college football coach of all time. That's it. The career's over. 72 years old, riding to the sunset. And you know what? He had Alabama one game away from playing in another national
championship. They would have won too.
Unbelievable, unbelievable career.
Maybe.
And the end of an era.
Do you think, Mikey, if they would have beat Michigan and won the national championship, he would have retired as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
So no matter what,
that was probably, I think that was probably like what his you know, the best laid plans of mice and men. But I think that was probably, he probably had this known for a while. I would think that he knew this was going to be.
I almost feel like he, early on when they were having all those issues with quarterback and they didn't know if they're, I think he was almost done at that point. And when he saw the fact that he was still able to get the team into the playoff, and then, you know, had so much success at the end of the season, I think to him that was the writing was on. But I think the writing was on the wall no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, he went. People are going to say, well, he didn't really go out on top. Yes, he did. I mean, he won the SEC again. He made the playoff again. He went out on top. There's nothing that you could say about this guy's career. And on top of all that, never any kind of controversy at Alabama with him, really. Never any major headline like some of these other coaches and some of these other teams, like scandals. Like, there wasn't that many major scandals like that with Saban, if any. So really just, you know, remarkable.
See to that Ryan Williams, that 5-star wide receiver recruit, as soon as he had committed to Alabama, and then as soon as Saban
decommitted.
Yeah,
so I mean,
there's gonna be a lot of guys, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can't, like, a lot of these things, like with high school recruiting, especially a year before they're even going to get there, there's so many decommitments from these kids regardless. Like, they commit somewhere and then they decommit. And, you know, but when, say, Alabama can expect somewhat of an exodus of recruits now. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. So, you know, but moving forward, I mean, he's a legend of the game. And I don't think you'll ever see anybody do what he did again.
Yeah. You see, Shador is already trying to grab all those guys and get them over to Colorado.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the name of the game.
You mean Dion? Yeah,
no, Shador put out a tweet.
Get the hell out of here. By the way, Colorado was such a fall from grace, man. I called it. They were like everybody's darling fucking team, and then they fell rock bottom after that Colorado State game. They were not the same team.
Sure. Well, it was his first year. I mean, let him get some recruits in there. But you're right. I mean, they were touted so highly, and they just fell on their face, man. All right, let's move on. Greatest college coach of all time, no doubt about it. He will be missed. It'll be interesting to see what he does. Does he go to the booth? Does he keep doing the Aflac commercials? What's he gonna do?
I would love to have Saban in the booth. I think he would I think he would be unbelievable. There's some coaches who are like a little bit too difficult to listen to. Saban, to me, has the perfect tempo, the perfect tone. I think he would be awesome in the booth.
He strikes me as like he's going to be like a Tony Dungy. Like he's going to be like a halftime guy. We're going to throw it to him at halftime and he's going to say a couple things. You never really get what you want out of those halftime shows. You never get the real full fleshed out opinions of those guys. They get like two sentences and then they got to kick it over to the next guy. But yeah, I hope we see more of him for sure.
He would be great. He would be great. You know, Lee Corso, as much as I love Lee Corso, and I do, I mean, I grew up with Lee Corso watching College Game Day. He's a legend. That would be a great like segue if they brought him in to kind of ease Corso out of College Game Day and he took Corso's spot. I think that would be really, really cool. I think he would flourish on a show like that.
I agree. All right, let's move on to another great leaving. I'm sure he'll find another job. I think he wants to find another job, but Bill Belichick is out in New England. He's both the GM and the coach. So in one day they lost both. Joey D, walk me through Bill Belichick and where he goes from here.
Kind of a sad fall from grace. Seeing how bad the team was this year. You know, obviously no one can deny what he did with that team. Obviously he had one of the best to ever do it, and Tom Brady, that always helps. But Bill Belichick, man, the guy found ways to win for a long, long time. And I think, you know, this is a mutual split. Everybody in the world has respect for him. But I'm very interested to see what he does from here. I don't know if he'll necessarily go to another head coaching position. I would imagine so, but I could even see him taking like a defensive, you know, coordinator position or something. I don't know. He's got a pretty big ego, so I don't know if he would take something other than a head coaching position. I'm interested to see where he would go, though. I'm not really sure.
A lot of the whispers is Washington. I don't know if that's
Seattle. You mean
no Washington? Washington Commanders. Oh. That's kind of been the little chirps.
God,
in the background.
They need a lot of help.
They do. I mean, offensively, they have some weapons. I mean, they have Jahan Dotson. They have Scary Terry. They got Brian Robinson. I mean, they have some weapons, but their offensive line needs a complete revamp. They were the worst unit in the league. The defense is a sieve. They're terrible. The two numbers I look at with Brady's legacy in New England is this: with Tom Brady, 219-64. With Tom Brady, 77% win. His career as a coach without Tom Brady in the NFL, 84-103, 44% win. Now, listen, it was a perfect marriage with him and Brady. It was, and it was the perfect place at the perfect time, and it lasted, which is the most difficult thing to do in the NFL is make it last. They did. They won 6 Super Bowl rings. Again, probably he'll go down as the greatest coach of all time. I mean, he probably will go down as the greatest NFL coach of all time, with or without Brady. I don't think you could really have that discussion. I think the two are linked together forever. You know, Brady obviously has that little caveat that he could always throw that he won another Super Bowl without him, which is absolutely true. But Belichick's legacy, I don't think is tarnished at all by that. He's still one of the best to ever do it. And again, I just think this was like Saban. It was just, it was a matter of time before, you know, all these great things, everything that's great eventually comes to an end. You know what I mean? Like nothing lasts forever. So, you know, again, just a passage of the time, and it's a new era again in New England now. And it's going to be weird. It's just like, you know, when's the last time you saw Alabama without Saban on the sideline? When's the last time you saw New England without Bill on the sideline? It's just going to be something very different that everyone's gonna have to get used to.
He's one of the best of all time. I think you're right, Mikey. I think it was just a perfect marriage at the perfect time. And people say, oh, Bill can't win without Tom, but Tom, he went and won without Bill. But you know what? Tom had his pick of the litter. That Bucks team at that point in time had everything. They had a great defense. They had all these offensive weapons. They were only missing one thing, and it was a quarterback. And they brought Tom in there, and he basically was able to run the show, and he won the Super Bowl. So I'm not going to – if you give Bill Belichick the Eagles tomorrow, I think he wins too. I think Tom just went to the perfect situation, or whatever. You give him the Chiefs tomorrow, the Bills, whatever. I think if you just put him in the same position that Tom got to inherit, because he just picked the best team that the only thing they were missing was a quarterback, you know, I think Bill could do just fine without Tom as well. But I just think that was, I agree with Mikey, that was just a perfect marriage, and it worked for so long. It felt, there were times where it felt like it was never going to end. I mean, that Patriots run was never ever going to end, and then finally it did. And you know, but you
I'd like Mike to see Vrabel goes there.
I wouldn't if I was him, unless he's got a soft spot because he played there. But I that's a mess, man. I would if I'm Vrabel. I'm looking at Ohio State. I'm looking at Alabama. I'm looking at the Chargers. I mean, I'll let Mikey talk. I mean, do you think he'd go to New England? I mean, I think that'd be a mistake.
Well, I mean, they could make it a very enticing offer to him if they want him. If Bob Kraft really wants him there, I mean, they could make a lucrative offer for him, and I don't know if he'd turn it down. But my gut feeling tells me that Mike Vrabel's going to take the year off. That's what my gut feeling is, that he takes this season off, sees where the chips fall, because right now there's what, 8 NFL head coach openings now with the Belichick news this morning. I think it was 7 yesterday, and now I believe there's 8 openings. That's a lot, and I just feel like he may want to just take this year off, recoup, regather, and see what goes on, because he'll be a hot commodity next year too. It's almost, sometimes it almost behooves, I think, these head coaches who are storied head coaches, and obviously Vrabel's not storied to the degree that Belichick is, but Vrabel, make no bones about it, was a very successful, the guy won head coach of the year last year. He won it last year. So I think sometimes it behooves these head coaches that were such hot commodities, when they have a bizarre fall from grace like this in one season's time, take some time off. And then when they come back, I think if he comes back next year in an open market, he'll be the guy that everyone
wants. Well, Harbaugh, it's going to be interesting to see what he does too. Because that's true.
Also, Chargers is the big rumor with Harbaugh. We'll see if that happens. But
I could even see Harbaugh going to like the Seattle Seahawks.
Sure.
Seattle, they're talking Dan Quinn. That's the big name that's being thrown around for Seattle.
Yep. Talk about Dan Quinn. Oh, I'm sorry, Seattle. I hope that doesn't happen for you. I hope it doesn't.
Great defensive coordinator.
He's going to get you to 8-9. He's going to get you to 9-8. He's going to get you maybe even to 10-7. You ain't going to win with Dan Quinn. You're just not. I mean, he's proven that.
Are you just saying that because he's with the Cowboys, Tick?
Yeah, fuck him. But yeah, all right. So I want to talk about Pete Carroll, but we're sort of stressed for time here. Maybe we can sort of weave it in towards the end, but let's get to some of these games that had playoff implications from last week. Let's begin with the Texans, you know, handling their business against the Colts. They squeak in, man. CJ Stroud.
That
was a hurricane. Mikey, talk me through that game and talk me through the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, CJ Stroud just, I mean, what was it? The first play? 75-yard touchdown. Like
Collins.
I mean, this guy, man. D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud. I understand that Stroud's not going to win the league MVP because of Lamar, and I get that. But man, and he was hurt, so he missed a couple games, but What a season. You know, him, Montana, and Tom Brady, I think, the only quarterbacks to lead the league in passing yards per game and lowest interception to touchdown ratio. And for him to do that in his rookie year, it's just an incredible, incredible testament to how underrated even though he went second overall, if anyone had any side of any kind of anticipation that he was going to be this good, he would have went 1-1 with a bullet. Yeah. He would have been the biggest quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. If anyone knew he was going to be this good, he just had a magnificent season. He found two guys that he immediately identified and liked in Nico Collins and Tank Dell, made them draft Tank Dell. Just an incredible job by Houston. And I'm excited to see Houston in the playoffs, man. Like they have a good enough defense. I'm not going to say they're going to, you know, go all the way or that they're going to go far in the playoffs, but they're going to be a fun team to watch. And that's why we all said last week, and we all agreed that it's not the time to bet against the Texans right now. You know, it's just not. They're a frisky team, man. And Stroud, you know, leading the way.
Damian Pierce really hasn't been himself this year either. And I think if he could return to the form that he was last year, then they really have something going. Because then, obviously, they got Devin Singletary in the mix. Devin Singletary is a journeyman. You want to talk journeyman, he's been all over the place. I think Damian Pierce is really a successful, awesome running back. And I think they need to keep getting him going. You know what I like about Stroud, though, is the kid's getting really emotional post-game. You can see how much it means to him. And I had some doubts about him coming out of Ohio State. I didn't know how good he would translate. He's answered every question. And I just think you have to continue to bet on him. And I'll tell you what, even this week they play the Browns. He could get his first ever postseason win in his first year as a quarterback in a team that was projected to be among the worst in the NFL. It's been an unbelievable season. And, you know, quite frankly, the Texans deserve it after the nightmare that Bill O'Brien brought them with just literally getting rid of players for fucking scraps. They got rid of DeAndre Hopkins for pylons. And literally the franchise has had a huge fan base that has supported them for years without really not a ton of success, except for a few years where they had, you know, Andre Johnson and J.J. Watt and those guys. But it's good to see, you know, Stroud be successful. And I honestly, I'll be rooting for them in the playoffs too against old man Flacco.
Yeah, Flacco has, he's never been one and done in the playoffs. He's never lost a wild card game. And you know, he's got that premier defense behind him. Just one of the best in the league going. So that'll be interesting to watch. Let's move on to the night game. The Bills played the Dolphins in Miami. And it wasn't pretty. It was pretty tough to watch at points. But Josh Allen, after switching the momentum from a massive kick return, takes care of business in Miami. And I mean that changed the whole landscape of the AFC playoff. Joe, talk me through that game and talk me through those teams.
This game shouldn't have been close. Buffalo dominated time of possession. They dominated, you know. It seemed like all facets of the game, and every time they got to the red zone, Josh Allen turned the ball over. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. We were on the Bills collectively, and we would get down there, and they had long, sustained drives, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minute drives, and then they come out with nothing. You know, interception in the end zone. The second time was a throwaway, which was almost like a punt. He had nothing on the fourth down. Then a fumble. It was a nightmare. But then that one kickoff, that punt return, that changed the momentum of the game. It gave the Bills life. And, you know, shame on Miami to have that much of a lead midway through the season and to just kind of collapse and let the Bills come back and win that division. They should have taken stranglehold of that, no problem. Now the Bills get to play at home against the Steelers, as opposed to, I think they would have been playing to get, was it the Chiefs that they would have been playing? That is a night and day difference. Listen, teams that are successful find ways to win. The Bills are a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of team, Mikey. We've said it all year. You don't know what Bills team you're going to get. 1 week they look tremendous. The next week they look very average. But they're finding ways to win, and they've caught a streak here at the end of the season to win the division. Played in front of their home fans. They're a team that I would not want to play just because they do have the firepower to go on and win a bunch of games. This was a weird game. Very, very weird game.
Mikey?
Yeah, I mean, look, you talk about two teams that are, from the quarterback perspective, are limping into the playoffs right now. Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa both really looked not good. Not good on Sunday night. You know, the Bills, I think, are better equipped because they have more experience, one. And two, I just think their defense is in better shape right now. Miami's decimated, man. They lost Jalen Phillips. They lost Bradley Chubb. They just lost Van Ginkel. They lost Waddle. You know, Mostert hasn't played. Like, this team is just, they're not going to overcome those type of injuries to those type of players. They're just not. And Tua, when he's got to go out there and he's got to do it by himself, he just looks not good. So, you know, they drew a tough draw. As poorly as Kansas City has looked at times this year, winning a playoff game in Kansas City is still a very, very tall task for a warm weather team like Miami. You know, I just thought that the game was a slop fest. I like the Bills. I like the Bills a lot. I thought Bills' money line was pretty much a virtual lock. Like, I couldn't see them losing the game. But, they didn't come in and impress me. I just think that it's two teams that are limping in when they had very, very sky-high expectations, especially the way the season started for Miami and especially the way Buffalo's reputation is with how good they've been the last couple of years. It's going to be interesting. Going to be interesting to see. Is it going to be the same old Bills? Because it pretty much has been all year. The Bills have not come out and consistently beaten teams up. They have not. So I don't know why anyone would think that just because it's the playoffs, they're all of a sudden going to find the magic juice and they're going to start blowing teams out. I think all the Bills games will be very close. Now, they play the Steelers this week. We'll get to that in the next episode. But it's just I'm not confident in either of these teams going into the playoffs. Neither.
Sure.
I'm not confident in either of them.
For good reason.
Yeah. They're definitely limping in. But the only thing the Bills have on their side when it comes to that is almost every team's limping in. Outside of the Ravens and the 49ers, no team looks that great. Dallas for sure, but you've always got the Dak thing.
True.
It's like that goes for Josh Allen. You know, that works in his favor, but the Bills were not going to win that game. If that kid didn't run that kickback, yeah, Josh Allen was in such a bad way in that game. He could not take care of the football. And every drive, it looked like finally they're going to finally get over this hump. He turned it over again. At the end of the first half, he just makes that dumb mistake. Turn it over on downs, end of the half. At least three. I mean, it was just miserable.
McDermott called him out too.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. But
well, you know, nobody's immune to that. You know what I mean? No matter who you are, nobody is immune to that. And you know what? The great ones don't want to be immune to that. I'm sure Josh actually appreciated getting called out. Like I am sure that he did not take that in any way insulting or personal. Like, right. It's accountability, man. It's accountability. Yeah. You are supposed to be, right. You are supposed to be the face of that entire franchise. And there's an expectation that you are going to deliver what Patrick Mahomes has delivered to Kansas City, deliver what Tom Brady delivered to New England, deliver what, you know, the great quarterbacks deliver. And that's Lombardi trophies. So, I mean, you set that standard, you have to live up to it. And I'm sure Josh wants nothing more than to live up to that. But again, it's going to be a wild card round.
Yeah. So, I mean, Josh got bailed out by the kick return. So, but that's why it's a team sport. You know, it's not just all on the shoulders of a quarterback. It takes the whole team. And that changed the
dynamic
of that game.
How many times Josh Allen single-handedly won the game for that team?
So he got bailed out. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. We're going to do one more game. There's plenty of games that have playoff implications, but just for time's sake, we got to keep it rolling here. I was asked not to do this game, but I have to. I really do. We can possibly skip over Bear Down if he doesn't want to talk about it. But the Packers, they beat the Bears, and they're in. They needed a win, and they're in. Joey D, talk me through these Packers, not just in this game, but your expectations for them in these playoffs.
The Packers, for long stretches of the year, have infuriated me because I truly believe they've shown glimpses of real talent and ability to play with good teams. They've shown the capability of being a team that can go out and make big plays and be successful. And then there are times where they play down to the level of their opponents and they look just like they're lost. The Carolina game, they barely won. They lost to the Giants. They look all these games where I felt like they should rise up and really take ownership of the game. This was a game I was truly not worried about. That being said, the Bears have been playing very good football, but there's just this kind of aura. I don't know what it is, but it just feels like when we play the Bears, we just truly believe we're going to win the game. And, you know, Jordan Love, offensive player of the week this week, I thought he made timely throws. He made good decisions. We missed a field goal early on, which pissed me off. But I feel like the Packers defense disrupted Fields. They made good plays. They didn't give anything up easy. And they did what they had to do to win this game. And I'm very proud of this team in a rebuild year, what really looked like they're going to be at the bottom, you know, tier of the NFL for a little while there to come through. And I said at the beginning of the season, I thought the Packers could win 9 games. Lo and behold, they won 9 games. They got the last wild card spot. And from here on in, whatever happens, I can live with it. As a fan, I'm very happy to see Jordan Love see success and make the postseason. I think this is collectively the youngest team that has made the playoffs in the NFL since, I think, There was a Browns team back in like 2017 that made the playoff or something like that. But yeah, just very proud of this team. They did what they had to do. They manned up. They won the game. They dominated for long stretches. And you know, it must be frustrating for Mikey. I'm very lucky that I've been on the. I'm not trying to rub salt in the wounds at all. I'm just. It's got to be frustrating to see the dominance we've had against this team. I don't know what it is, but man, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears had a makeshift offensive line in. Nate Davis, one of their starting guards, tapped himself out of the game after one drive. Tevin Jenkins had the worst game of the season that he's had, and he's been our best offensive lineman. They had a guy named Dan Feeney playing center. I never even heard of the guy. No idea who he is until last Sunday. Jalen Johnson didn't play, and as expected, Jordan Love just eviscerated them with the pass. The Bears can't beat the Packers. Justin Fields, they only let him throw the ball 16 times. He got sacked 5 other times. He tried to throw the ball, holding on to the ball too long. And then the times that he didn't, there was pressure in his face instantly. Just they can't beat Green Bay and they can't figure it out. So the long and short of it is same old Bears, but over to the Packers, because the Bears, I've talked about the Bears now all week on different shows and shit like that. The Packers will go as far as their defense takes them, because I believe that Jordan Love is beyond legitimate. I believe he's beyond legitimate. Everything I see from him in the pocket looks cool, calm, and collected. He never like looks too rattled. Now, could a great defense in the playoffs potentially rattle him and fuck him up? Yes. But I still think that Green Bay's path to winning playoff games will be that defense, because they're a Jekyll and Hyde act. They gave up 30 points to the bumfuck Panthers, and then they looked like the 85 Bears against the Bears with all the sacks they were getting. So it's going to be on the Green Bay defense. Are they going to be able to consistently pressure the quarterback with those guys up front? Are they going to be able to cover the back end? If they do, I think the Packers, listen, Packers have the Cowboys 9 out of the last 10 times they played them. Okay. So it's not a stretch to say that the Packers could upset the Cowboys. And we all know, like Ticket said about Dak Prescott, when it comes to the big moment in the playoffs. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now with Green Bay. I think that they'll go as far as the defense takes them.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, listen, guys, I'm not Nostradamus. We all know that. I went 3-16 or something like that. I can't tell you how well the Packers are going to do here. But what I can tell you is, if I'm a Packers fan, you've already won. You've already won this season.
That's right. This season should
have been a wash. And for you guys to squeak into the playoffs, you've seen Jordan Love without really any exciting offensive players around him. He's got some
Been out for weeks.
Yeah, Watson's been out. I mean, I like the running backs, but they show
Aaron
up sometimes.
Aaron Jones, the Bears had no answer for Aaron Jones. Jones did whatever he wanted. So did Love.
But then there are teams that have all the answers for Aaron Jones, and he disappears completely, and it's all on Jordan Love's shoulders. So to be as good as he's been, I know it's been spotty, but without really – I mean, you talk about how the Bears might need another piece. The Packers need one piece. Give them one good piece to throw to. You obviously needed to clear some things up on defense, but, man, you've already won.
They've got the one thing that every team in this league searches for to the ends of the earth and back, the bad teams, and that's a quarterback. They have their quarterback. Jordan loves their quarterback. This guy,
he's going to be good.
Going to be good. He is good. He is good.
But I mean, like, for a while, he's going to be good for a while.
It's staying power.
It's so unbelievable to me. And my God, is it the same old story at Hallis Hall? And just watching your arch rival still make the playoffs without a Hall of Fame quarterback that fucking just leaves them high and dry, just leaves them.
Yeah.
It don't matter. Next man up. Next man up only works with some teams who know how to develop the next
Bears don't do that, right? You guys keep
having to say next man up all you want. Yeah, you can say next man up all you want.
They had the same system they had when Rodgers sat behind Favre, and now you've seen Love sit behind Rodgers, and hopefully whoever we have next sit behind Love. They're doing it right.
That's why I'm so uninterested in the Bears getting Caleb Williams or another quarterback. It's like, you can't do next man up if you keep putting him behind the same offensive line with the same offensive coordinator. It's not going to matter.
Bears fired their entire offensive staff yesterday, but kept the head coach. Now, what is the purpose of doing that? If they do bring in a rookie quarterback and they draft Caleb Williams, let's say, and you keep him with Matt Eberflus, and the Bears flop next year, they win 4 or 5 games, 6 games, and they don't make the playoffs again. You're going to keep Matt Eberflus another year? No, you're not. You're going to fire him. Now, what about the two coordinators that had to just get hired and brought in for Matt Eberflus, the DC and the OC? What are they gone to after 1 year? It's just asinine. It's asinine practice. The only way now that it makes any sense is if they keep Fields. And I don't know if they're going to do that. And honestly, I don't think Fields is the long-term answer. I see the same mistakes. I want him more than anything to be the long-term answer, but it's the same mistakes every week. He just holds on to the fucking ball. Every time I watch him drop back, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it, sack. Get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it, sack.
Or he does
once every 7 drop backs, he'll do the Houdini act and take off for 20 yards, which is great. It's wonderful. Nobody else in the league could fucking do it besides Lamar Jackson. And sometimes I think Fields honestly has better escapability than Lamar Jackson. But it's few and far between, and you can't win that way in the NFL. Because he gets hurt every year. He misses games every year because he has to do that bullshit. They are so ass backwards, and it's continuing, and it's never going to change. And I'll be sitting here next year at this time next year, and I'll be saying the same goddamn thing again next year.
If you guys
move on to a different game.
if you guys let go of him, I want the Eagles to get him immediately. I really like
Justin
Fields.
You're out of your fucking mind,
Tim. I think
you have Hurts.
He's in a horrible position over there in Chicago. He's had no guidance, no help, no offensive line. The best thing they ever did for him was DJ Moore. And look how much better they were this year. I mean, it was just keep helping him and you will get better.
That's what they may do.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, so we got to move on here. But the last thing I'll say is Matt LaFleur, I've given this guy all kinds of shit. I think Joe has as well.
Yeah.
I can't put all of the credit on Jordan Love. He had a great bounce back year without an Aaron Rodgers to prove that he's a pretty good coach. I mean,
LaFleur in the beginning of this year, Jordan Love looked very lost in a lot of situations.
Sure.
As the year went on, LaFleur took him off the leash. Took him off the leash and gave him more concepts to allow
which
him.
Which is what we said we needed to do.
I think you're right, Tick. You're right. I think LaFleur deserves a lot of credit. In fact, I think he deserves a lot more than he's getting.
He's built a good relationship with him.
Fucking hate this fucking situation so fucking much. We're going to bring back Matt Eberflus. It's just so infuriating. He's done nothing to show that he can improve anybody on this team. Oh, the defense. See how much better the defense got? You got Montez Sweat. Of course the defense got better. He's an all-pro edge rusher. Of course the defense inherently is going to get better. But you fucking... Well, who has he improved? Who has Matt Eberflus improved on the offensive side of the ball? Nobody. How has the offense improved? It hasn't. Nothing has improved. It's the same thing.
You gotta look at Ryan Poles. He's your guy.
That's another. Ryan Poles has hitched his wagon to Matt Eberflus' star, and that may be the worst fucking decision in the history of football.
We gotta move on, guys.
You started it. You started.
You're right. I should have moved on. I was talking about Matt LaFleur, and somehow it went back to Ryan.
I'm muting my mic until we get to the next.
All right, guys, we gotta move on here. Let's do who's a problem. Joey D, who is a problem this week?
I'm gonna go with Jordan Love and the Packers, man. I mean, they are legitimately a team that I don't think anybody in the NFL, in the NFC right now wants to face. Now, will they win this week? I'm not saying they're going to win. All I'm saying is that
they have
the pieces in place. And as Mikey said, it goes as far as the defense goes because this offense can keep up with any other team. They can score points. They can in a hurry too. They have a young cast of receivers who've proven to come out of nowhere and be very successful. this team is playing with confidence right now. And when you've seen in the past teams who just sneak into the playoffs but are starting to play their best football at this time, they can get hot. They can win a few games. I honestly, I'm not just being biased. I have been very hard on this team throughout the year. I've been very hard on Jordan Love throughout the year. But they're showing me that they got what it takes right now to go and play a good, solid, well-rounded game. Whether they win or lose, I think this next wild card game is going to be a doozy.
Mikey, who's a problem this week?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say Tua Tagovailoa in a bad way. Tua Tagovailoa, it just seems like now, you know what? It's like that old saying, ticket, like you fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, right? 2 years in a row now, this guy has looked like Steve Young, Joe Montana for the first 2 months of the season. And then, man, oh, man, at the end of the year, he just fucking goes off the – now, last year, yes, he sustained so many injuries. But this year, man, like game on the line, he just looks – if there's ever a guy who needs to have like a marquee, I think if the Dolphins could somehow, and I'm not saying they're gonna, if they could somehow upset the Chiefs in Kansas City, it would be a defining moment for Tua, because God knows he needs one. There is no quarterback in this league right now, I think, that needs a more defining moment to prove that he's really worth the kind of talk and hype that surrounds him, the way Tua and the Miami Dolphins need that victory against the Chiefs this Saturday. He just, it's very, very scary to watch if you're a Dolphins fan, because what are you going to do with this guy? You're going to pay this guy the bank breaking contract that's just going to have to be given, because that's the way the precedent and the league standard has been set with the quarterback numbers. Are you going to do that? I don't know, man. I don't know. I just, that's a scary, scary proposition if you're Miami right now with Tua. So I think that's a big problem. Big problem.
I would agree completely. All right, my problem this week, I'll keep it somewhat short here. You've got NBA, you've got hockey, you know, you've got Tortorelli. You know, there's a lot there with Kevin Hayes and what happened with Cutter Gauthier. I thought about doing that one. You've got a lot in the NFL, college football. You want to talk King Clowns? You want to talk about a real problem? I'm talking about American Airlines, okay? This company.
That's a bank job.
Is one of, I mean, for air, and it might just be airlines all over the world. I don't know, but I'm going to just really focus in here on American Airlines.
The industry is terrible. It's terrible.
It's not the weather, because Perez is quick to remind me, American Airlines can't help the weather. I get that. Weather happens. They're not accountable for it. You booked a ticket, knowing the weather. I get it. Whatever. I'm not even looking to be reimbursed, although I should. I should. The problem is, leaving someone on a tarmac for 4 hours until 3:30 in the morning, and then all you can do is dump them back into the terminal with a mile-long customer service line. It looked like people were going to the Elton John retirement tour. It looked like people were, it was unbelievable how long that line was. And at 3:30 in the morning, do you know how many hotels you can check into? Mikey, do you guys have any idea? Zero. You can check into none. They said, figure it out. And I did. And I got banged, and I've slept five hours in the last 48. And fuck that airline. I love them. They're my guys. I have plenty of miles with them. So good for me. But I got banged, and I guarantee you it won't be the last time. They need to change that. You can't just dump 100 people. And we weren't the only one fucking canceled at that time. There were 5 flights, over 1,000 people waiting in a customer service line that they had one poor guy for over 1,000 people. Joey D, what do you got here?
I just want to look at it from the other end of the spectrum. Maybe they valued your safety so much that with the ongoing tropical storms and tornadoes, they said, this young man by the name of Neil Arnett is too valuable for us to send this airplane up in the air right now, that if something happens to his health, we just couldn't fathom what the outcome would look like.
But and it wasn't, it wasn't the weather, Joe. It was that my pilots timed out. My pilots timed out.
Well, we all time out sometimes, Tick.
Staff, I don't. Bill Belichick.
I stay working. I stand on my business.
I agree with you. I went through the same situation that you did a little over a year ago when I went to Europe with Bob. And of course, Bob was on British Airways and fucking first class, like easy, smooth. He almost missed his flight. Remember, there's a bomb threat at the airport.
Yeah.
So Bob showed up late. Yeah. Bob showed up late because he wasn't even going to show up. I was basically stranded there.
That was good.
Bob gets on his plane. No issue. He showed up an hour before his flight. Gets on, smooth sailing, and I missed my flight, and I had to change to an overnight red eye to Chicago, and then from Chicago, I had to fly to New York or to London, and from London, I had to fly. It was a nightmare, and I ended up doing what Ticket did. I flew 24 hours pretty much straight because I couldn't get back on the regular, like, I guess, schedule for what I needed to do. It's just a bang job, and it's awful, and by the way, Ticket, I had so many people tell me that I should have been compensated. Don't do what I did. I didn't take the due diligence and follow up.
They're getting a call. I could have got a lot.
Make the call. You will get compensated.
They're getting a call. Viewer questions. First one comes from Mitch Ferris. And this one's for Joey D. How long would it take Joey D to make a hole-in-one the same way that Jerry the Don just did? How many shots?
On the simulator?
Yeah, he didn't say, but I think so.
I think it's kind of lucky, man. Yeah.
I'll be honest, it might take me more.
Yeah.
It might take me less. It's definitely, like, if you put somebody there who is actually, like, a very capable golfer, like Perez, you could say, okay, with just looking at the probability of how many good shots he's going to make, right, he would probably be there significantly less. I would go on to say that I'm a better golfer than Jerry, but I am as inconsistent as the wind. So it really comes down to, it's like poker, right? The better hand you have, you're not always going to win with pocket aces, but if you have pocket aces, you're going to win a bit higher percentage of the time. So you want to look at something like that and be like, what's the best percentage that right. I have? And I don't know if I'm that much better than Jerry that I would be significantly shortened in terms of how many swings it would take. It would be a nightmare. And I actually said to Bob and Perez that maybe it's something we explore down the road. I don't want to just be like, you know, the copycats that all of a sudden somebody
we
does
need
it
to wait
everybody
a bit,
else does it.
For sure.
You got to give that some period of time.
Yeah, no, you can't even, I don't even think you could, I don't think anybody else in our wheelhouse should do that.
I do think it's been done.
Let it lie.
I agree, but I do think if anybody were to do it, I think like my reactions, I would get so pissed off.
Yeah,
and I would blow up so much. I think I'd be the most animated about it I would probably be the candidate to put up for it. But yeah, I mean, I've never had a hole in one in my whole life.
My back would have been thrown out by the 200th swing. My back would have been done. I would have to just go to the
everyone
hospital.
Kept talking about his hands, like, oh, his hands must be all blistered up. All I was thinking about was same thing, Mikey, his back. I was like, oh, how is his back ticking?
He took 2,700 shots. 2,700 so if you think about it, if he shoots 100 on a golf round, and that's not even counting putts. How many putts? You have 30 to 40 putts around. So think about it. He swung 2,700 times. That'd be the equivalent of 27 rounds of shooting 100 and not putting, just shooting the whole time.
Did you guys see that I quote tweeted like Big Cat, like doing the live stream with Jerry? And I tweeted at the pro football doctor, the guy who sends out all the tweets in real time about NFL injuries. Yeah, I was like, what do you think about this in terms of the long run for his back? And he's like, and he gave like a legitimate breakdown of it, saying like what he thought of it. It was fucking great. Cause I that's one of my favorite follows on Twitter is David Chow, the pro football doc. He's great.
I just joined Twitter, by the way, 2 days
ago. I followed you because I didn't even realize you were on there.
Are you on Twitter?
Well, I joined 3 days ago, Mikey. So you hopped on board pretty quickly. So
now the goal X.
It's X, formerly known as Twitter.
It'll always be Twitter to me.
We need to get you on there. I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing. I feel like an old man on it. I'm like, I was asking the Jet the other day. I was like, so how do you take someone's video and then you put it on a tweet and then you have your own caption because you don't want their caption?
Quote tweet.
And then mention. Yeah. I feel like my dad asking me
Twitter's
about Instagram.
Great, man. I fucking love Twitter. It's great.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. It's ripe for the trolls.
It's a
big troll game. All right, let's do one more and get out of here because we are strapped for time here. Patrick Stewart, Sir Patrick Stewart, love your work in X-Men, asks, I am proposing next month, and I was wondering, how do you handle the nerves? I will leave that to you two gentlemen who have both proposed in your life. I wouldn't know anything about it.
I would start off by saying if you have nerves, then maybe it's not right time to propose. You should be pretty confident.
Nerves about being like
I mean, if you have any kind of hesitancy that you're not sure what she's gonna say, abort fucking now, that's not it's unless you're doing it in like some kind of grand fashion, like you're gonna propose in front of a group of 100 people for some, you're at like an event and you're preparing to like go up on the Jumbotron or something like that, I would say you don't have to be nervous at all. Just enjoy the moment. It should be a very intimate moment between you and your significant other. And, you know, just enjoy it, because once you're married, game's over, pal. So get the nerves out now, because once you're married, that's it. You want to talk about nerves? Wait till you're fucking married. Then you're going to have some real nerves. The proposal, the honeymoon stage is easy. Anybody can do the honeymoon
stage. I will say the one piece of advice I'll say is leave it to the professionals. So, like, I wanted to do a whole elaborate thing on the beach with roses and stuff. I talked to one person. She was like, this is a nightmare. So I went and hired.
Perhaps this guy can't hire somebody, though, to fucking.
But I'm saying if you can afford to hire, it's just, if there's anything you should be spending money on, it's on an engagement.
Like, I'd love to know more information about this guy ticket. Can we reach back out to him and find out where he's planning on doing this? If it's like, then me and Joe could just, we'll do it free of charge. We'll tell him how to do it free of charge.
That's very true.
I don't know if you want my advice, but I went and got somebody. I hired somebody who set up everything, broke everything down, had everything ready. And all I had to do is go with Nicole to the site. I mean, you can't fuck that up. You really can't.
Sure.
And my other piece of advice is make it sentimental. Don't do something that you think is nice. Do something that you know she will think is nice that relates back to her.
That's right.
That's my two pieces. That's a very good point. I mean, I've never proposed to anyone, but I took a girl a long time ago. I took a girl a long time ago for Valentine's Day to a Los Angeles Kings game, because I thought that was so sick. And she was like, I don't even like hockey. What are we doing? I was like, maybe it's the Kings. It's the Kings. Kopitar's going to have a huge night.
That is so
Jonathan Quick's going to get a shutout.
That is so bad, Tick.
That
analogy is preposterous. An engagement to Valentine's Day with a girlfriend? That's crazy.
I was trying to say that make it sentimental for her, not for you. I was just saying I don't know anything about proposals, but
yeah, the don't one thing propose I can in say. Like don't propose in like a sports bar.
With yeah, like anybody your, who like proposes, buddy. By the way, in like a sporting event, that's a recipe for disaster.
Unless the girl's obsessed with sports.
Yeah, but still, sure. it's a very embarrassing kind of like moments all on her. They don't like a lot of
that. Is true. I want to know if I'm getting an honest yes, and I'm not sure at a big event I'm positive.
You know what you do? If you're not sure if she's going to say yes, you propose in a stadium because it puts a pressure on her to say yes.
I think that's a recipe for disaster. Don't do that, because you don't want to get stuck with somebody who's going to say yes.
You don't want to fake yes.
Yeah. Well, this has gone completely off the rails.
Yeah, it sure has.
We should just start giving relationship advice.
Yeah, we might have a spinoff show here. all right, gentlemen, that's episode 1 of 2 down in the can. Make sure you guys like, comment, subscribe on the YouTube and the Instagram. We appreciate you guys. Fire your questions in. Mr. Anderson will send them back to us, and we can answer some of your hot dating questions. We can continue on that road. How do you want to propose? Joey D will tell you. guys, that was another good one. That's Joey D, that's Mikey V, I'm the Big Ticket, and we will see you guys next time.